Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. Today's guest was a runaway at age 18, largely due to the gap between strict rules and expectations at home and her burning desire to test her wings. She left the family apple farm in Montreal, Canada, and got a job with the Canadian Air Force. There she met her husband, married, and had two children. A divorce left her and her two little ones far away in Sebastopol, California, where she arrived homeless, no income, but with $3,000. They lived in a 1981 Dodge pickup for 8 months, but she was her father's daughter, after all, remembering his ethics of hard work, washing windows, painting, and a chance meeting of an angel led to having a roof over their head without a headliner, of course. Led by vision and deep belief in peace, she became an international project development specialist and founded a peace organization in Ukraine, which she has led for the past 18 years. She is a speaker, a consultant, with a host of international clients from Finland, Japan, Estonia, and Silicon Valley, just to name a few. She is also ordained minister and is recommitting to being an author. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Barbara Ledger, welcome to today's show.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm so excited to have you here, Barbara. I know that we have a lot of things to cover with you, but I wanted to get one thing sort of straight right out of the box. You know, you have a peace organization in Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Moscow, Indiana. There's a Budapest, West Virginia. Now, for your Ukraine, is this not in the middle of Nebraska?
No, it's Ukraine, sort of right above the Black Sea, above Africa, divided by the Black Sea, and so, next to Russia and Poland.
So you speak Russian?
I do, and I speak Russian and a little bit of Ukrainian, but more Russian than.
Can you say something to our listeners in Russian?
Да, я очень благодарен, что сегодня я здесь с тобой. Благодарю.
Well, you know, I'm an expert in Russian, and I
so what did I say?
What did you say? Well, I guess we have an awful lot to talk about. You have a very interesting life, running away from home at age 18, and your accomplishments really, quite honestly, seem profound.
Mm.
So I wonder if you could just start us off by maybe just telling us how you really define yourself. You've covered so much space in your life. How do you define yourself?
That's a great question. A pioneer, a renegade, a country girl.
You picked apples.
I did. I spent my childhood playing with the apples. I love my life. I love life. I believe in giving it all you've got. I like challenge. There's good and bad in that, of course, because the more you like it, the more you get them. So I do have a purpose, a mission for myself, which is to learn, love, and laugh in all things.
L-L-L.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I love alliteration.
Uh-huh.
I'm working on a product now with alliteration. But learn, love, and laugh in all things. Uh-huh. Give your best.
Well, your life has not been an easy one.
Well, it's a lot easier than a lot of people.
I'd like to know how peace became a focal point of your life. I mean, I've never had a guest that had an organization out of the country. So this is truly unique. And through many of your accomplishments, if not all, peace seems to be the underlying foundation.
Right.
So how did all this start?
I want to just, you know, put some context around it based on looking back from where I am right now. And what I understand right now is that I've been driven by peace, but really the thing that's really been pulling me is to learn how to be peaceful. So that's really different than going and making peace and telling people how to do it, but really learning how to be it is what I understand this life has been about up
until
now. Well,
that's a very, very interesting response. And that has great depth in itself. And I guess my follow-up question then is, why is it that you have this compelling sense of wanting to find peace?
Well, you know, it started when my son was pretty young, 9 or 10, and he asked me one day, his face was white, he was in shock, it looked like, and he said, am I going to live long enough to go to college? And I went, what?
How old was he?
He was 9 or 10, and it was during the Cold War, and, you know, where everybody was worried about, you know, the Soviet Union bombing us and us bombing them. And you know, I don't think we really, as adults, we're not perhaps as conscious as we need to be when we talk in front of children about things that they can't really understand, and it frightens them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had been talking about the things we were afraid of, and it frightened him. Mm-hmm. And so I realized
these are the world affairs that you were referring to.
Yeah, right. And so I decided, I didn't decide, I was catapulted that day mm-hmm. into a new life.
And that did it.
That was enough. I mean, I looked at my precious son, and I had a daughter who was part of it too. Shortly thereafter, I was doing a radio show on peace, and I was interviewing people, and mm-hmm. I interviewed her, and I said, so where does peace – well, tell me about peace. She said, oh, Mom, you know, peace begins within. She was like 7. I was like, okay, I'm surrounded. So, but, you know, I think the thing I really like about peace is that it's about creating a different reality. It's about creating – it could be about going to something that used to be common. It used to be the way we lived. We lived with each other at some level, at some time. I believe we must have lived in harmony.
And are you speaking largely because of the way society is currently, or the world is really right now?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that we've lost our way somewhat in the world right now, and have attended to things that really were designed to make our life easier, but in fact, they've been divisive, or they've, you know, I mean, just look at electronics and the internet and all those things that were supposed to give us more time, and we're all busier.
32% of the population looks at pornographic.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's a high percentage. So high. The thing I like about peace is that it has a possibility of getting us in touch with ancient universal values and principles. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean, you know, judging one person better than another. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean where we remember that we're all connected. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Confucius said, whenever that was, over 2,000 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, when there's peace in the heart, there's peace in the family. And when there's peace in the family, there's peace in the town. And when there's peace in the town, there's peace in the city. And mm-hmm. in the city and in the country. And peace in the country is mm-hmm. peace in the world. Yeah. And I believe that's our true nature. So.
Oh, I think so, too.
So I'm committed to.
Who does not want peace?
Well, the people that profit from war, of course.
You really wonder whether deep inside they would say, I'd like to hang this up.
Well, I don't think anyone truly wants the ramifications of war.
Yeah, right.
We think it's inevitable. You hear growing up that, well, you know, it's inevitable. They will always be fighting, you hear.
Right.
You know, war is just a fact, a sad fact.
Right.
But I don't believe that. I don't believe that that's our nature, and I believe within everyone, those that are profiting from war and those that are going to war, people don't want to put their line, their mm-hmm. life on the line for so. Foolishness and right. and for the wrong values. I don't believe that the value of money should be what tears countries and families apart.
The root of all evil, right?
No, I don't think so. I think money is great. I met Buckminster Fuller the first day I went to work at New Dimensions Radio, and he said that day that you can do – if you just eliminate destructive production mm-hmm. and turn it around into productive – mm-hmm. production, constructive mm-hmm. production, mm-hmm. then all the challenges of the world would go away because we would be working together to solve things mm-hmm. for the betterment of everyone.
Sure.
And that's it would be profitable. It would be economic. Yeah. I'm not an economist, but, you know, that's how I look at it.
Yeah. So you have a organization that you founded, obviously the visionary, in Ukraine. 18 years ago, that's a long time. So tell us about your organization and how you – its mission, its vision, and how you operate it from here in the United States.
Well, I went there in – I arrived on September 11th, 2001, 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Kyiv, which was 9 a.m. in New York. Mm-hmm. So that was a little signal to me that, you know –
Something needed to be done.
Something really had to happen. And – that day, the next day, I was interviewed on radio and television, and what I discovered in the process of sitting with people who were afraid that World War III was going to begin, what I discovered in myself was I really believed that we needed to lean into peace at moments like this. Mm-hmm. And I'd been working for peace for 30 years. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to Ukraine.
Now, did you go to Ukraine to form...
Yes.
You did. Yeah. So it was on the
agenda. It was on
agenda.
The agenda, yeah. Right. It was the intention. But anyways, I think that when you discover that something that important, is that important to you on a day like this where everybody's wanting to make more enemies and increase the divide.
Right.
I knew in that day that we needed to create understanding. We needed to understand how is it that we're living that's creating this kind of a possibility? And how could we do it differently? Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned that day and I went, wow, that's not what I thought I came here to do. Mm-hmm. I came here to learn, and that's mm-hmm. what I've been at.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about starting this organization up in Ukraine. Did you speak Russian when you?
I spoke about 50 words of Russian when I went there.
And now you do about 62.
No, now I'm fairly fluent.
I can tell.
But I went there to bring and teach peace and love mm-hmm. as a New Thought metaphysical minister. Mm-hmm. Which is really a very ecumenical form of connection with the infinite life. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went there because I'd worked in the Soviet Union and I really and in Russia and I for economic development. I was working for peace there too. Mm-hmm. I used to, my business slogan was business with a human face. Mm-hmm. Because I know that when let's use money as a way to connect us instead of as a way to divide us. If we create joint ventures, we have to learn how to be harmonious. We have to look at each other's perspectives and needs. Mm-hmm. And so, but that didn't, you know, I wasn't terribly successful, although I had a great time. And I learned a huge amount. But when I went to Ukraine, I wanted to teach people the power of peaceful thinking and positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. And
so did you have this... We have to take a break, but I want to ask you. You can answer this after the break. When we come back from break. Did you have the vision of how you were going to set up this organization when you landed, or was it something that it was on the job training that you got there? And
yes, and yes,
yes, okay. Yes, and yes. Well, I always ask good questions.
You
so
do.
We are going to take a really quick break, and we're going to be right back. If you are just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And, of course, I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Barbara Ledger. Welcome back, Barbara. I had asked before the break, when you landed in Ukraine, whether you had a picture or an idea or a plan of how you were going to form this organization.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, I did. I thought I would just go and open it up and do it like a business or like a nonprofit in the United States. And I was quite a successful business person and a little bit full of myself. So I thought I just knew exactly how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I had a interpreter, God bless his heart, he used to work with me in Russia and Soviet Union. And Grisha, after a week, said to me, well, how nice it is you came here to teach us about peace and love. It would be really great if you had some. And I, you know, I didn't know that about myself, really. Right. You know, so anyway, the idea that I had, I started with, like, let's build an organization, let's hire a staff. And we didn't have any money. I mean, it's all been done with volunteers and donated.
Donated.
Mostly all the money's donated from people in America, different individuals and peace centers and science of mind communities. And but part of the way along, I realized that I had to adapt more to the culture that I was in.
Sure.
And I'm embarrassed to say that it took me a while to realize that and to give up my expectations and of how things should be. And now I understand when donors say to me, well, really, aren't they financing it themselves yet? Mm. And I go, you know, when was the last time you tried to change the mentality of a culture, especially a post-Soviet culture where it was not safe to have ideas. You weren't supported or encouraged to take initiative or to trust anyone or speak out. And so to invite people into a level of an empowerment teaching like the one I'm bringing to them takes a lot of courage.
Mm-hmm. Certainly does. Tell us a little bit more detail as to what your organization does.
So the name of the organization is Temenos.
Temenos.
Temenos. And in this country, it's Temenos Center for Spiritual Living. We have a 501c3 here. Mm-hmm. And in that country, in Ukraine, it's Temenos Center for Self-Realization, and we have a nonprofit there. Mm-hmm. And we have boards and advisors in both countries. And here, I'm the only staff person. Mm-hmm. And there, we have three staff people, and we own our own little office suite. Mm-hmm. And we own, although we have a mortgage, on the garden property that we work in, sort of like a community center with a garden, and have our retreats and our meetings and our social gatherings. And it's also a home and where guest teachers stay when they come to work with us.
How many lives have you touched through that organization?
Probably directly, maybe 10,000 people.
So that's a few folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a few folks.
The whole thing has changed since the war in Ukraine, the nature of how we do what we do, and the structure has to change. Mm-hmm. There's a different mentality there now than there was before. But, you know, our vision is that Temenos is a prosperous center cultivating peace, purpose, and possibility. And we see that what we're doing is planting a garden with perennials, you know, with perennials.
I like that.
Yeah, because perennials create the form and the structure and the longevity of any good garden.
You're so graphic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like to have a visual image of it because it makes more sense to me. And I was farmer.
Yeah.
And farming is and nature is really the model of life.
Sure is.
So whenever we use nature, there's something happens inside of us that feels, we align with it very easily.
I want to jump a little bit to your international flair. You're a consultant with endless countries. I mean, Finland, Japan, Estonia, Silicon Valley. How did all that happen?
Just like anything, it starts with one funny little pearl, like my son asking that question.
That was it.
And I had a client in Sonoma County – who was quite famous. It was Jeannie Schultz, and her husband was the cartoon. Oh,
really? Of course, right. Charles was.
And so I knew them a little. I knew Charles a little bit, but Jeannie and I worked, and she had a brother who had a friend in Holland, in the Netherlands, and he wanted to bring over this group of Holland business people and do some economic development. And to sweeten the deal, he wanted to bring over a youth choir. So he asked his sister, who should I get to coordinate this? And she said, oh, you should get Barbara. So that was how my international thing began, was just to like organize a youth choir.
It isn't as if that you were you were out beating.
No, it's just pure serendipity.
Isn't that wonderful?
Well, it's actually synchronicity, because when you do this thing correctly with a wide enough view and this thing correctly, responding to what life brings you when you do it, or you say no, like I said no to my first client in business. I didn't accept them because it wasn't on track. I just intuitively knew it. So just that one little invitation put me in touch with the mayor of Heerlen and this whole Dutch exchange program I did in Santa Rosa, bringing process engineering students over and mentoring. And that led to another thing, led to another thing.
And it just grew like a garden.
It just grows like a garden.
Isn't that beautiful, my goodness sake. Now, you're also an ordained minister. Tell us about that. How did you evolve to – I can see a very close association or affiliation between peace and Christianity or spirituality.
Right.
But tell us how that evolved as well.
Well, it's, you know, shocking enough to my family, given the renegade part of me, that I might ever end up as a minister. That's pretty shocking. But, you know, honestly, what got me turning in the direction of spirituality was the frustration that I had with clients who would call me towards the tail end of a project or the tail end of something that should have been addressed a long time ago, or with a great idea, but not with all the resources needed. And I went, I want to work at the head of the dog, not at the tail end of this. And what is it that determines that? That's our attitude. And so I wanted to work with people, bringing in a different sense of possibility to how they were going about their business. And so believing in a greater sense of possibility is really a theme. And I think, you know, that comes largely from my father, who always said you could do anything. And then also being born in a pioneer family. You know, I was raised in the home that they had built with no nails, you know, wagon train families. And so I have that kind of sense, or maybe it's in my morphogenetic field. It's all in my little DNAs. But I have that sense that anything really is possible. And I've been called all kinds of names for such foolish idea, but I actually really believe it. In fact, the biggest possibility that I believe in is peace on earth in my lifetime. I know that it's possible. I know that it's up to people like me deciding to choose to become peaceful.
What is your vision for the future then?
Great. My vision for the future is that we learn how to cooperate, that we learn how to share resources, that we learn how to listen to each other instead of tell each other who they are.
Right.
I believe that the future is just beginning, a great future, a golden future is just beginning. And, I truly, truly do.
Well, you speak with deep emotion and inspiration, tremendous amount of belief in what you do. And that's a very beautiful, beautiful thing, unquestionably. Your life started out a little bit different. You were a runaway at age.
Well, I mean, I told my parents I was leaving. I didn't sneak out in the dead of night.
So you told. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I was the oldest of four children, and I have a very independent nature. And
I can see that.
Yeah. Although, you know, I'm
soft.
Also
you're very
a good,
soft.
I'm also a good team player, but
I can tell.
I love discovering. I love learning. I love growing. And
sound of crickets.
Sound of crickets.
the smell of apples?
Oh, yeah. Well, those were all lovely. I loved living on the farm. Mm-hmm. But and then we weren't on the farm when I left. We were nearer to Montreal in a town. But anyway, there was something in my nature that just knew that I needed to progress. And, you know, animals have instinct and people have intuition.
Right.
And it's the impulse of life within us that says, mm-hmm. don't get too comfy here. You might mm-hmm. get stuck. And so, and my father used to say, oh, my gosh, you know, you just change. You're so changeable. Just settle on something. I'd say, no, I can't yet. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, he must be laughing now to see that I've settled for so many years in Ukraine, and it's still vital and dynamic for me. Mm-hmm. So that's I can't remember the question. I'm sorry.
Well, I forgot the question, too, so let's make up another one.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about your father.
Oh, he's a strong, handsome man who left his family and set out on his own and had really strong work ethic and deep, you know, values about personal responsibility. And I inherited those things, whether I wanted to or not.
Was this through the lectures that he gave you? And you had brothers and sisters.
Yeah, right? I was the oldest of four kids. And so, you know, oftentimes I'd be the one interpreting the message. Mm-hmm. But
so he spoke high level?
Yeah, we had lots of long conversations. But anyway, he instilled in me the idea that I could do things and that life is really to be lived. And you have to give your best. He'd say, I was just talking to my sister. She said, you know, one of the things I remember that Dad said mostly, I said, let me guess what you're going to say. And she says, okay. And I said, it doesn't matter whether you're washing the dishes or working on the street or running the company, do the best you can. She said, yeah, he used to say that to me too. So, you know, that was one of his core messages is do your best.
Do your best, right? What great advice.
It's great advice.
There's no question about it.
Because what's the difference, you know? I mean, I remember a time when I had an option with someone to be really upset and angry and not trusting and resentful about somebody that I had worked for. But in fact, I realized that if I let those feelings get going, I would not be doing my best. My behavior mm-hmm. would be affected by mm-hmm. my attitude. Mm-hmm. And so I just went, well, we're all doing the best we can do, even that person.
Wow. So what kind of work did your father do?
He was a salesman. Mm-hmm. And he could sell ice cream to the Eskimos. He was a great salesman. He was really great. And he loved it.
Very successful,
I presume. Yeah.
What was the biggest takeaway then, would you say, that you took away from your father? Was it the work ethic?
Well, if you know, I think it's, well, it's about being responsible for yourself, being accountable, mm-hmm. and doing your best.
God, what a great thing to teach, isn't
it? And that anything's possible. Those are three fabulous benchmarks.
I personally believe that.
I do too.
Anything is possible.
I do too.
That you can imagine.
So, see, the world doesn't have to be going
down. You want to join forces? I'm headed to Ukraine. That's where I'm going. We're going to need to take another quick break, Barbara. But when we come back, I want to talk about your mother.
Okay.
Okay. Again, you are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KK Community Supported Radio, 88.5 FM. And, of course, I am Henry Cuenca, and I'm with Barbara Ledger. And Barbara's a very exciting guest, and Barbara, want to hear a little bit about your mother's influence on your life.
Oh, God bless her. Let's see.
You had a name of Hawkeye.
Yeah, you know, when we were kids, there was a field. After we left the farm, there was this big empty field next to this huge old Tudor home that we lived in. and there were bushes at the end. And whenever we'd lose a baseball, we'd play baseball there. Mm-hmm. Whenever we'd lose the ball, somebody would say, go get your mom. Because she always could find those balls. And so we gave her a nickname, uh-huh. Hawkeye. And she loves birds. I mean, uh-huh. she loved birds. Uh-huh. And she probably still loves them wherever she is. She's not in the physical form anymore. But I miss her a lot. And, you know, it's so interesting because my parents weren't demonstrative. Mm-hmm. And I'm really demonstrative, partly maybe in reaction to that. But my relationship with my parents since they have died is more demonstrative than it was while they were here in form. Mm-hmm. Just I have this warm connection to the spirit of them.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's beautiful in itself. We may have overlooked some of the services that your nonprofit extends, so we're going to take one step back and tell us about the services, right?
Well, we have a mission. So the vision is that we're cultivating peace, purpose, and possibility for the people of Ukraine and beyond. And we have a mission which speaks to the some of the ways we work. And the mission is using all moments for good. Mm-hmm. And our purpose is peace on earth. So mm-hmm. everything we do is designed to contribute towards peace. Mm-hmm. Therefore, peace is not something that happens out there. It's not a trickle-down kind of experience. It's mm-hmm. really a bubble-up kind of mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. So everything that we do in Ukraine, starting with ourselves and as the ripples go out from us, everything is designed to assist us in knowing ourselves, taking responsibility for ourselves, mm-hmm. becoming more peaceful, transforming those places in us where we carry enmity and hatred and mm-hmm. and fear and self-loathing and judgment. And we use everything we do to do our own work. That's mm-hmm. a basic core structure of our organization. And so as a staff, we do practices together. We learn to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. We analyze. Like this morning, we have two main programs, or three. We have an educational program to teach people how to learn about themselves and how to transform their habits and their attitudes and the power of their beliefs. We help people connect the dots between what you think, what you say, and what you do. Mm-hmm. And so if you believe that the world is, you know, Henry Ford said that. He said, you know, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. You know?
Sure.
So we teach people to be mindful of how we use this great tool called the brain.
What a beautiful approach.
Yeah.
Because in reality, you can't go anywhere until you clear these – you connect those dots within yourself.
Right. But you can, but you wreak havoc everywhere you go.
That's what goes on, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. So everything we do starts from the seed of peace inside. Mm-hmm. And this morning, I made up a new acronym for peace. I was just thinking about the show, and I thought, what is really the essence of peace for me? Mm-hmm. And I wrote this. I don't know if it'll stick, but it feels really right. Purposefully expressing alignment with consciousness energy.
Boy, that's profound.
Wow, I love that.
Copyright that.
Well, something. so everything we do is to know ourselves and then empower other people to know themselves. So we have a youth – our biggest outreach program is with young people. Mm-hmm. It's called 21st Century Youth. And this morning, the staff and I on Zoom were analyzing the SWOT that we each contributed to following this year's program, which just ended in end of April. Mm-hmm. And so it's a 9-month program, and we were doing the analysis. And part of the analysis is to be able to look at ourselves and go, I didn't do this early enough. I didn't mm-hmm. pay enough attention mm-hmm. to this. Mm-hmm. But to be able to create safety in a team where you can actually have those conversations, mm-hmm. that takes a lot of
no question.
Preparation
I
and time
can,
and
I can
commitment.
See that. I can see that.
So we do a lot of peace work. We teach young people how to notice what they're thinking. We plant alleys of peace. We plant trees in public land mm-hmm. all through our city. We have essay contests. This year we had 172 essays.
Really?
And last year we had 230. And now we give them the theme. We used to ask them, the students, what's the law of life that really matters to you? And they would say, I don't know, what is the law of life? And
you know, Barbara, this strikes me as really, I'm going to use the word profound because I really think it is. There is so much depth and value in what you teach. And I honestly have never heard of a course of that nature here in the United States.
Oh, yeah, there are everywhere.
There are?
Oh,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, not everywhere, maybe. But, you know, in some way, anybody who's working for the societal good, mm-hmm. they're going to be dealing with people's attitudes, beliefs, actions.
Well, right out of the box, there's no question about it.
We just deal with it from, you know, very frontally. Very, uh-huh. It's very visible. It's right. Like our priority.
Sure.
If we can't be peaceful, there won't be peace on earth.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I mean, so when somebody yells at me at the bank line, you know.
Or the post office.
Or somewhere, you know, I don't yell back anymore. You know, I'm grateful to say it's not even hard uh-huh. to just go, okay, fine. So, but anyway, we're doing really great work, and you asked how many people we have touched. Mm-hmm. I just did the numbers of how many we touched mm-hmm. with this 1 year's program. Just directly, it was over 500 people. Mm-hmm. And then if you add their siblings and parents sure. and other kids who were in the classroom when we made our presentation mm-hmm. and the people that read the books that we create every year with the essays from these young people, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just we're having a huge impact.
You have to be. That's wonderful.
And so this year's theme was last year's theme was, what does peace mean to you? Mm-hmm. And this year's theme was, if you could change anything, what would it be? And then sub-theme was, so does that mean you believe you can change something?
I love that. How clever. Barbara, you landed in California from Montreal in Sebastopol, Northern California, and you were homeless. And you had two children, and how old were your children?
Well, when when my husband and I left the military, we were in the Air Force, American Air Force, and I was Canadian Civil Service for the Air Force. We moved back here where he was from, which was Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And then when our marriage didn't work, and you know, it's always hard when a marriage doesn't work because you have children and you have love and it's, you know, so that's never a pleasant experience for anybody. But anyway, it happens. And so what I needed was to leave the Bay Area where it was noisy and I wanted to go back to an apple farm. Mm-hmm. And so I moved back to Sonoma County. Not back to. I moved back to the apples, to Sebastopol in Sonoma County. And I had $3,000 from the sale of our house. And I knew that if I touched it, it wouldn't last but a minute, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I traded in my Pontiac for a truck mm-hmm. and built a little platform to sleep on and we set off on an adventure, and that's what I told my kids. We're going to have an adventure. We're going camping.
And you actually camped.
We camped. Actually, it was more like 6.5 months, I uh-huh. think. And uh-huh. we actually camped, uh-huh. you know, everywhere. But we were homeless. We right. weren't on vacation. Uh-huh. And we've had a lot of those experiences that homeless people have. And I tell you, I've worked with homeless people and the issue of homelessness in Sonoma County. And while there's always people that are there by choice and there's always people that are doing nefarious things, mm-hmm. By and large, most people who are homeless are there because they just were like a majority of people one step away from not being able to provide for themselves. And if you got sick, you lost your job. A lot of mm-hmm. people end up on the streets mm-hmm. just because so many people are living so marginalized. Right. And I really came face to face with that.
Well, obviously you did.
Yeah.
So you had two young children. You had a 1981 Dodge, right?
Yeah, 318 engine. I knew how to do mechanics on that truck.
How'd you tune it up?
Yeah, I would tune it up. I replace the intake manifold gasket. I replace the wheel bearing thing in the front end.
How'd you do that without?
Did you come with tools?
No. People helped me. I'd say I need to do that, and he'd say, I went to this mechanic. He'd say, oh my God, I can't believe you're going to do that. I said, well, I don't have the money. You want to do it for me? That'd be great. So, you know, after that experience, I told my dad, I said, you know, I think everybody ought to spend a year being really poor, because it really shows you what you're made of, how resourceful and resilient are you. Mm-hmm. And it shows you what matters to you. Mm-hmm. It's great. I mean, not
so
that it's easy.
So let me ask you, what mattered to you during that process?
Having my kids feel normal, uh-huh. Not having them feel like, oh, my gosh, we're poor. And, I mean, we were poor.
Mm-hmm. Of course you were.
And even after that, you know. Mm-hmm. But they never felt like there was anything wrong with them.
So what did you do for your food? Meals.
What did I do? I think I had welfare. Mm-hmm. I did. I had food stamps, actually. Mm-hmm. So that was covered. And I had a small child support, which I don't want to go into, but uh-huh. It wasn't quite enough. But nonetheless, we were resourceful. Uh-huh. And I was raised on a farm.
Yeah.
So you can,
well, you're a farm girl.
You can do anything.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
So you started washing windows. That's
yes.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
How did you evolve to that specific?
It wasn't necessarily evolving. It was like, all right, what can I afford? I can get a bucket and a mop, and I do know how to wash a window. And so, you know, that's what I'd do. I'd go around and I'd knock on people's doors and say, wow, what a beautiful house, but your windows are kind of dirty. Wouldn't you like to have them sparkle? Uh-huh. And I did, and I picked apples off our tree. I'd climb the tree with the pillowcase, and my son would bring the, you know, he'd come up half the way, and I'd lower the pillowcase, and he'd put it in the wagon, and then we'd go sell them. I mean, it was great. It really was like,
well, I can
see
great.
That.
I mean, you had the right attitude.
Yeah, that's it. Right. I mean, that's really it, because so many people who are marginalized did not have the benefit of what I had. I had a right. good upbringing.
Yeah, right.
And I don't mean that you have to have a lot of money to have a good upbringing. I had the right attitudes given to me. Mm-hmm. Be responsible for yourself. You're
well,
never
you had
a
victim. You had a rigid household.
I did. The household was very strict. But, you know, a little hindsight shows you the value of those things when put in context.
Uh-huh. So your father was very heavy-handed on the rules of the house.
Well, rules were very important to him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so you all fell in line.
Pretty much.
I read a note that I think that you gave me that your father learned Arabic.
No, I learned
you
Arabic.
You learned. Do you still know it?
No. Assalamu alaikum.
But, what prompted that?
I don't know. I was nine, and we were on the farm, and my father had a classical education, you know, Greek, Latin. Mm-hmm. I took Latin in school, too. But anyway, something possessed me when I was 9 years old, and I spent the summer studying his Greek books, learning how to write the Greek alphabet, mm-hmm. and or the Arabic alphabet, I mean, studying Arabic. And to this day, I don't know what motivated me, except – if you believe in synchronicity, which I
sure.
do,
everybody does.
Something in me had to be open to embrace another culture as different as mine, mm-hmm. in order for me to be living the life I've been
sure.
living.
Sure, understand.
So those books in the bookshelf with the glass door on them were my invitation into mm-hmm. another world.
Interesting, very interesting. So take us from window washing to being a painting contractor.
Well, that was just another thing. You know, I knew I painted my house when we sold it, and I was talking to my first angel, Mr. Gilbert Davis, on Main Street, Groves Realty, who really was such an angel to my family. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, why don't you paint houses? There's, you know. I said, well, I've never done anybody. He said, that's all right. I'll introduce you to a realtor. And he introduced me to Dick Pellicini, and he gave me a job painting a rental house. And within 6 months, I was specializing in Victorians.
We want to hear more about that. But, Barbara, we have to take another quick break.
All right.
Again, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today, Barbara Ledger. Barbara, before the break, we were talking about somebody said, well, why don't you paint houses? And you rallied up to the cause. So tell us about that transition.
Well, you know, as a single parent and somebody who's committed to providing for your family, you do what life brings you. So somebody said, well, what else can you do? And I said, well, I painted my house. You know, I said, okay, well, great. So he introduced me to somebody who had a lot of rental units, and I did that. And then, as I said, I think within 6 months I was the specialist in Victorian houses.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And I painted the first house to go more than two colors in Sebastopol, and it was five colors. And I overcame my fear of heights, and it kept my kids working all summer long. Because
so
I'm
how
to
how
the job.
Were you, how old were your kids then at that point?
I think my daughter was like five or
and,
six,
and you had them chipping away with you.
Well, because I couldn't leave them home alone,
right?
And so, you know, I'd leave them, and then I'd go and get them at breakfast time, and after breakfast, and bring them to the job,
uh-huh.
And they would do that with me, and they painted the lattice work and the uh-huh. things that, you know, they could do.
God, what an experience.
Yeah, so they're very resourceful young people.
Well, they have to be.
They are because yeah. they had to be.
Yeah, they take after you.
Right. Well, it's not a bad thing to be resourceful.
No. Tell me about it. So you painted windows. I mean, you painted houses, and you ultimately developed a couple of different painting crews. So
yeah.
you were a contractor.
Right? I was. Well, I wasn't licensed, but I was. The first woman house painter in Sonoma County, and I had a crew in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And what moved me out of that track that I was on, which is just survival.
Right.
What moved me was I injured my back, and I couldn't paint anymore. I mean, I seriously injured my back. I spent 3 months in bed, except for the daily chiropractic visits. And it got me on another track where I had to articulate what really mattered to me. And that's how I got into broadcasting, which took me into production, radio, and television, and had me meeting people who really believed in possibility. And, you know, one thing leads to another. Mm-hmm. So I ended up connecting with Alan, who was the man with the Dutch choir.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to all of these other consulting opportunities. And then I opened an office in Silicon Valley because I had a client in the Netherlands who was like a customs warehouse. And we were just, you know, this was in the 90s. And so it was a perfect thing to be in. It was perfect business. It got me out of the country mm-hmm. into seeing what the rest of the world was like. And I was paid well. And when I went to Ukraine, actually, the first 2 years I was in, or first year and a half I was in Ukraine, 1 week a month, they would fly me to Estonia, and I did the biggest consulting of my career.
Really?
In Estonia. And that's what started my work in Ukraine. That's what we paid everything with, was my 1 week in Estonia.
So that was the bridge from window washing to painting to international works.
Yeah.
And when you were a young child, what did you ever think of the future that you were going to become or wanted to become?
Well, I wanted to be a writer. I wrote poetry, but I wasn't encouraged in that with that part of my nature,
mm-hmm.
and so I let it set for a while. But I'm writing again. I've written a lot. I've been published, but. Really, I'm committed to writing.
That's a firm commitment.
It's a firm commitment, and every day I've journaled for 45 years every day, and I do my meditation, my prayers, my intentions. Every morning I do my gratitude. I learn a lot about myself by just letting my pen write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ask a question and I just do.
Benjamin Franklin.
Something will come yeah. through, yeah. And so I pay attention.
So you do this every day?
Every day.
How long do you write?
Well, when I wasn't so busy, I had a three-hour practice, which was writing, meditation, prayer, gratitude, reading, and just, you know, silence. But now, you know, I'm lucky if I get an hour.
Uh-huh. Well, still a lot of time.
But I have lots of books. I've got probably 20 titles, and I've got some, you know, that are started. I have a great book that I'm accepting submissions for called Grandmother's Fever. Mm-hmm. And it's, if you're a grandmother or had one and have a story to tell, you know, I'm creating a compilation of books.
Mm-hmm. Your home life wasn't necessarily, or I shouldn't put it that way because I really don't know, but what was there a lot of spirituality that was?
No, my home life didn't have spirituality in the traditional sense, but what it had was a lot of value of nature. Uh-huh. It had a lot of value of right relationship, respect. There was a lot of laws of life, some of them too extreme for me, you know, I felt at the time. But we were not religious, although as a kid, they would say, if you want to go do it, go. And I was like 8 years old singing in the church choir up the road when on the farm, you know, and it was a motley crew. You know, Herbert Bazell was playing the organ. He must have been 90. Mm-hmm. And then there was me and my cousin who were nine. And a few odd folks in between.
So your parents didn't go to church then?
No, they were not interested in church. Uh-huh. I chose to get baptized when I was a teenager. Uh-huh. And I've always been really fascinated with not religion so much, but in the search for meaning, mm-hmm. which seems Frankly. Most obvious in religion. But religion doesn't really satisfy it, I don't think, because most religions really are talking about this is what it means. Mm-hmm. Do it this way. And I think most people need to come to their own conclusions mm-hmm. about what has purpose and meaning for them.
Yeah, it's really
and maybe it's just because I don't like rules. But I think we all need to answer those questions ourselves.
Oh, I think everybody should answer those questions. My goodness. Well, you're going to live in a box.
Oh, yeah, I have a great story about a box.
Tell us the story.
There's a bird. I had a bird house my daughter gave me, and it was on the porch 2 feet from my front door. For 3 years, little nuthatches have come and made their nest there, mm-hmm. trusting little creatures, you know. Mm-hmm. And I knew last week that they were going to fledge. I could just tell. Mm-hmm. And I talk to them every time I go up and down the stairs. I say, how are you doing? And, you know, mm-hmm. and I heard the babies go from the tiniest little squeaks to flapping their wings in the box. And mm-hmm. I said to a group that I had at my house last Wednesday, they're going to fledge tomorrow. I just know they are. And I opened the door in the morning and I said, good morning, little guys. And this little tiny bird flew up and looked out the window, out into the rest of the world mm-hmm. from its box and looked right at me. And in that moment, you know, when William Blake said, you know, to know the universe in a grain of sand. Mm-hmm. And so in that moment, that bird and I were absolutely connected. Mm-hmm. And I felt such a rush of love. There was incredible moment. He was, or she, whatever, they're flapping to hold itself up to look out the window at me.
Wow.
And so I understood that there was a message in that for me. The bird has its instinct that says fly.
You know, I had a similar experience with a fish one time. Uh-huh. And the world just stopped as that fish looked at me.
Yeah.
I looked at the fish. Amazing.
Yeah.
So, Barbara, we're nearing the end mm-hmm. of the show. And I wanted to ask you one more question. Then I'm going to let you kind of soothe this out. You had mentioned at some point that you discovered a 17-year cycle for yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Can you tell us about that? Tell me about that.
This was so exciting to discover this. My grandmother you'd ask her a question, and her answer would always be, 10 or 17. And so I had this 17 number was always kind of meaningful in my head. And a few months ago, I don't know why, I was looking at my life, and I'm going to be 72 in October. And I was kind of looking at the main aspects of my life. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I've had 4 17-year cycles.
Jeez, that's interesting.
And I mean, literally, they're that all really 17 years. There's the first few days, a few years, uh-huh. where I was just a baby. But after that, childhood, you know, parenthood, consulting, and ministry. 17. So now I'm on my fifth 17-year cycle. It'll take me to, let's see, 72, 82, 89 years old.
Wow. Okay. You're going to be my age pretty soon. You're going to catch up with
me. Well, you know, I think you're always going to be ahead. I think that's the thing about age.
Barbara, how would you like to sum up the end of our session today?
I just encourage every single person who has a dream to believe in it, because there's so much power in letting yourself know what you care about. I really believe that one of the greatest things we can do as people is to learn to listen to each other. And I have people that it's hard for me to listen to, but I'm committed to learning to listen. And I believe we need to forgive each other and move on. We need to not hold grudges. I think life is amazing. I think we're born to experience it fully. And I think we limit it ourselves and we blame something else. And really, if we only knew that by knowing who we are and forgiving ourselves and others, we set ourselves free, we would have a different life experience. And I intend to keep on this journey.
Well, I think you've made a mark with myself, our listeners, and our engineer. Barbara, this has just been wonderful to have you
as a guest
on my show.
This is
so profound to hear you speak the way of what you do.
And, wow.
Really just wonderful. You have been listening to the community-supported radio KKRN at 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website at kkrn.org and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. And a special thank you, Barbara, for being on our show.
It's been my great joy, Henry. Thank you. Спасибо.